You're listening to the Men Overseas Podcast, a show that explores methods and ideas to help you live a bigger life. You will hear interesting stories of how people live, how they save and invest their money, and why having time wealth is better than being a billionaire. If you are entertained, educated, or elevated, be sure to hit the subscribe button. We're just getting started. Now here is your host, Brad D'Antonio.
Well, hello, if it isn't my beautiful MFs. So glad you're here. Today, I'll get into a few shows that are popular on Netflix right now that I had a chance to watch this past week. I'll have more sports than I usually do. I'll talk about a theory on why Asian women tend to go for white dudes. And I'll finish with some money stuff. But funnies first. Them's the rules here. Kevin Nealon is back this week. He says, dudes pack 45 boxer briefs for a one-week vacation like they're expecting to shit themselves three times a day. That I'm guilty of. Not of messing myself, but I'm one of those dudes who packs way too many pair of drawers, and I don't know why. It's the only clothing item that I do this for. Why do we do that, fellas? Or you know what I do sometimes? I will wear on a plane. Like if I'm going on a long flight somewhere, I will, in order to travel lighter, I'll wear clothes that I have no intention of wearing ever again so that I can throw them away when I get there. And it never fails. Somebody will say to me on the plane something like, oh, I really like your shirt. Or some old man will be like, oh, that color sure looks great on you, young man. And I'm like, no way. This never happens. But I guess I have to keep this Steve Francis jersey that looks like a jersey, but it's actually a shirt. You know the kind I'm talking about. Mark Norman, comedian from New Orleans, tweeted this little dialogue. So the friend says to Norman, marriage? Oof. Same woman every day for the rest of your life? And Norman says, you've clearly never been married because she's a different person every single day. Bob Golden says, I've never found a windshield wiper setting that truly satisfied me. I'm with you, Bob. DJ B says, remember when people wore a long sleeve t-shirt under a short sleeve t-shirt and it meant that you liked music? Ian Ellis says, I've never met a crazy sports parent that played at a high level. Usually things that are funny have a kernel of truth to them, but that one's true and not funny. But I included it anyway. In the comments, guys started calling out former pros who they've come in contact with that did, in fact, go nuts at their kids' games. And names were Jeff Hornacek. Remember the basketball player that used to rub the side of his face before he's shooting a free throw? Little white guy for Utah. Ed McCaffrey is a name that came up. Bobby Bonds evidently drove onto the field one time in his Mercedes and got out and threatened to kick Jim Brock's ass for benching Barry. And Jim Brock was the longtime coach at Arizona State, so Barry was a sun devil. So the story goes, Brock held a team meeting with Barry Bonds not present, and the players got a vote on whether to keep Bonds on the team. And most players voted to get rid of him, but Brock had ultimate veto power, overrode the team, and Barry got to keep playing and was eventually drafted by the Pirates in 85. Io, the account Io, shared things that regularly happen in movies but rarely, if ever, happen in real life. And I'll just share some of the good ones. One was ordering food or drinks at a restaurant or bar, then not eating the food or drinking the drink, and then leaving without paying. Another one, people ending phone conversations without saying bye. Third one, female protagonists beating up muscular and much larger male bad guys. That one's unfortunately probably gotten a few women beat up in real life because it leads you to believe that women are as strong as your average man. But as we know, it's not even close. Statistically improbable mixed race romantic pairings. And he gives the example of East Asian men with black women. Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen that in real life, and I've been a few places. Next, having sex under the sheets. That's a good one I've never thought about. Although I bet they do a lot more of that in, say, Scandinavia. Next one is important business meetings in a conference room that only last a minute or two. Somebody added another one here that I thought was good. He said, on a random school day, a mother will make a ridiculous breakfast spread that her children will completely ignore because they're late for the bus. Yeah, that never happens in real life. Another guy added a good one. He said, two people waking up with morning breath and then talking to each other from a 3-inch distance. I'll add one of my own to the list. How about couples that stay snuggled up all night, acting like they wouldn't get all hot and aggravated and push the person off? I watched the Kevin Hart roast on Netflix last week. I usually love roasts. They said they were trying to fill the shoes of the last roast, so trying to make it as good as the Tom Brady one. And by that measure, I think they failed miserably. I don't think it came close to the Tom Brady roast for a lot of reasons. I did like that they didn't feel the need to tell everybody they loved him before roasting him. So that was an improvement. Shane Gillis, I thought, was a great host. He did a great job. Tony Hinchcliffe always kills at roasts. Of course, the roast master was good. That is, what is his name? Jeff? Ross. But nothing else was better. I'll give you a few of my beefs with the Kevin Hart roast. One, it was a weak dais. I looked up the word dais, its usage over time, because I don't remember hearing that word when I was a kid. Or even 20 years ago, I don't remember the word dais. And the word's been around a while, but it pretty much went extinct in the 18th century and then was slowly, gradually resurrected. And it says that it really took off in the mid-20th century with the advent of television panels and roasts. So there you go, the more you know. But the dais had quite a few people that I'd never heard of. One of the guys was a longtime friend of Kevin Hart's, Big J. Okerson. He said that when Hart invited him, he told him it would help his career. So part of the reason I think the roast wasn't good was because Kevin Hart was just trying to help a few of his buddies, some of his longtime friends, with their careers and getting them up on the dais. Some others I hadn't heard of. Naeem Lynn. He evidently has a show on BET. Regina Hall. I wasn't sure who that was. Nor did I know who Teyana Taylor was. The best thing about her performance, if you could call it that, was what Gillis said after she finished and walked off. He said, thank God she's good looking, because boy, is that bitch not funny at all. But even the people that you had heard of, I don't know if maybe stars didn't want to do it. I know it was taped on Mother's Day. They did it live. So maybe that's why it was lacking in funny people. Like Draymond Green, he was up on the dais. He got up there and said, all these jokes were written for me before he started reading them. But he's not known for being funny. He's just a dude. But it was said that he was a poker buddy of Hart's. So again, just inviting his friends. His best joke that he probably should have taken credit for, Draymond I'm talking about, his best joke I thought was directed at Chelsea Handler, who was also a longtime friend of his up on the dais. I'm using the word dais more times today than I have in my whole life combined. But his joke was that he'd never be involved with Chelsea Handler because he's Draymond Green and he doesn't hit threes. And the crowd was so lacking in famous star power that they kept mentioning Machine Gun Kelly was there, and they must have shown John Stamos from Full House. They showed him 3 or 4 times. You know what I think the problem was? One, roast should be reserved for superstars and goats, not 46-year-old comedians who still have a lot of career left. I mean, he could be in the middle of his career. And nobody, I don't think anybody, would put Kevin Hart up there like with Chappelle or one of the greats. I saw where Dave Cyrus called Kevin Hart the Michael Jordan of baseball of comedy. I also think Kevin Hart's just a poor choice of person to be roasted, because you know what half the jokes are going to be. They're going to be about his height. And so that's predictable. Predictable isn't funny. And I think it's better to choose somebody who doesn't take jokes so well. That's what made the Bieber one so good. Bieber looked like he was getting his feelings hurt at times, but not Kevin Hart. He stands up and laughs, and like every time he's made fun of, he thinks it's the funniest thing ever. Unless he acts like he's pissed, which what I would have liked to see is somebody making fun of Kevin Hart's delivery. That I think would have killed. Like somebody gets up there, like imitated him. Like, Kevin, you got rich making up stories to tell people. The people in the crowd, you tell them, you know what? I don't like pineapple, so I spit out the pineapple. But what I did eat, I'm standing there and I'm chewing the pineapple. So I say to the guy, I tell him secretly that I do eat the pineapple as long as the pineapple's good. So I grab the knife and I look at the knife before I start cutting the pineapple with the knife. I'm not a huge fan, obviously. I think Kevin Hart's probably not that cool of a guy. He's not somebody I'd want to spend a lot of time with. And so the type of people I think he attracts tend to be not that cool. I didn't think Pete Davidson's set was good either. I expected him to try to shock the audience with his jokes. That's what he does. And he sadly chose Charlie Kirk for that. And I thought it was in poor taste. And I don't just say that because I'm a fan of Kirk, but it just wasn't funny. There were better jokes, I thought, that were told about Pete Davidson than any that he told himself. And he's a comedian. Jeff Ross talked about his dad rolling over in the rubble. So his dad famously died on 9/11. And he made a joke about Davidson. You know, he's a womanizer, how he only dates 9s and 11s. So I thought that was pretty funny. But Lizzo was up there. She was terrible. I don't know how she gets invited to something like that. She said not one thing funny. And those are my thoughts on the Kevin Hart roast. And it's too long. I actually didn't even watch the last probably 30 minutes. It's over 2 hours long. In Houston, we're not doing funnies anymore. In Houston, the Texas Children's Hospital is opening the first detransition center. They're going to reverse some of the craziness of the past 5 years. Literally reverse it, I imagine. And they're offering those services free for the next 5 years, or I guess from the date it opens. We watched The Crash on Netflix the other night. Have you seen it? It's like watching a 90-minute Dateline, if you like Dateline. It's just the one episode. I'd give it a B+. It's worth watching. Keeps your attention. And I won't play spoiler if you want to watch it, like I did with the Kevin Hart roast. But what happened was a 17-year-old girl in Ohio, Strongsville, Ohio, had her boyfriend of 4 years, his name was Dom, in the passenger seat. She was driving a Camry, I believe. Dom was 18, so the girl was 17 driving, 18-year-old boyfriend in the passenger seat, and they had a pretty volatile relationship, Dom and this girl. They enjoyed smoking a lot of pot and fought a lot, and she had a lot of videos of herself smoking and driving at the same time, and one of their friends was in the back seat. Davion, who was 20 years old, and she drove almost 100 miles an hour into a building, instantly killing the passengers, but not herself. So she lived, which is amazing. I don't know how you survive that. And the postmortem, or maybe I could choose a better word there, afterward, it was determined that she had the accelerator pressed all the way down as far as it would go. So she floored it, literally. Shout out to Rick Perry. See, Rick, there is a way to use the word literally correctly. And this girl, she didn't even touch the brakes. So they show you the live replay of the crash, and they showed it in court because it was caught on surveillance by a camera on a building nearby the crash. And it was so horrific that one of the victim's moms had to leave the courtroom to throw up. And then this didn't help her case. Shortly after the accident, she was out partying like Casey Anthony, just living it up. And her mom, when you see the parents, it kind of starts to make a little more sense. The mom didn't help her case at all. When they tried to question the girl who caused the fatal crash, the 17-year-old, the mom says, one of the parents said that they wanted a lawyer present because before we answer any questions, we want our lawyer here. So the cops ask, okay, well, is it okay if we have a look at her phone? do you have the password? And the mom said, yeah, go ahead. We don't have anything to hide. But I'll let you watch it before I give you any more opinions on it. I think it's ranked number 2 on Netflix right now, right behind the Kevin Hart roast. Pizza Hut is being restored to the way that we remember it as kids, with the red roof and the big vinyl red booths and the stained glass lights above the table that even a 10-year-old would hit his head on. They'll have salad bars, and even Pac-Man is making a comeback. So Tim Sparks of the Dallin Corporation is converting 80 Pizza Hut locations to the original 1980s look. The entrepreneur Sparks says that his first job was at Pizza Hut. Interesting. When I was 10, 11, 12, there was a Pizza Hut across the parking lot from the movie theater in our town. And going to the movies was a very popular thing to do on Friday nights. I mean, even if there weren't new movies there, you just go see Aladdin 5 times in a row. And you'd be decked out in your Jabot jeans, tight rolled at the bottom, rocking a pair of Jordans. My first pair of Jordans were the Jordan 4s, if you're curious. Came out in 89. I had the black, red, and white ones. I thought the first 3 pair of Jordans were ugly. But getting them later, you know, waiting till the 4th pair, gave me some time to develop my sales skills. You know, that's something I didn't realize till I had a sales career of my own, that what you're doing when you're little, trying to get your parents to get you some Jordans, for example, that takes some sales ability to sell them on the idea that you, as a 9-year-old kid, need the most expensive tennis shoes on the market. That is until the Reebok Pumps came out. Those came out in late 89, but they didn't get real popular till 91 when D. Brown pumped up his Reeboks while he won the slam dunk competition. I mean, we only had one kid in school, this big dorky guy that had the Reebok Pumps, and we thought, wow, he must be so rich. I think they were $170 at that time. And that was right around the time that stars stopped doing the slam dunk competition. The 80s was the golden age of dunking when Spud Webb won it, and Jordan and Dominique Wilkins would compete for the title. I remember thinking that year that Jordan beat Wilkins, that was 88, that Wilkins should have actually won it. But Jordan was at home. It was played in Chicago that year. And they gave Jordan a 50 on that last dunk, which then became iconic, where he jumped from the free throw line. But watching it live, it just looked like a regular dunk. And I was like, why doesn't he do any tricks in the air or something, try to get his score up? And then the announcer said, well, he jumped from just inside the free throw line. And on replay, sure enough, yeah, he jumped really far. But him saying that didn't help me think it was a perfect 50, which was the score he got. Oh, he jumped from inside the free throw line? So he had a foot fault, basically. But it was pretty much from the free throw line. And then Kobe won it in 97, but he wasn't a star yet. In fact, he was the youngest player to ever win it. He was only 18 at the time. Anyway, this isn't the sports update part of the pod. That'll come before the money stuff. But before we, well, let me go back to the movies. So what would happen is your parents would drop you off at the movies. You'd be decked out, meeting your friends, or maybe you had a little girlfriend and you'd hold hands the whole movie. But my mom wouldn't allow me to walk across the parking lot to go to Pizza Hut afterward. And, you know, I sometimes wonder if my mom would have raised girls differently. Because as far as safetyism is concerned, I was raised like a girl. I couldn't go past the stop signs on my bike. My mom didn't like sleepovers. So my grandfather was a very worried person, bordering on paranoia, and she was 2 girls, so my mom and her sister. And so I think I was raised with a lot of that same paranoia, and the safety thing was way overdone. So I think if you have a choice in the matter, which you never would, I say better to be raised by a mom who had brothers. Otherwise, she'll raise you like a chick. And I was kind of raised like a chick. But I broke the rules a lot. Maybe that's why I'm the rebel I am today. Maybe. I don't know. If given more leniency as a little one, I might not have been so quick to bend the rules or to live a life that's contra the norm. You see what you did, Ma? the classic Pizza Hut. That's how we got to talking about this. So the ones that have been restored, they are way outperforming the modern ones. But the corporate office is closing 250 stores just in the first half of this year, 2026. And the classic look is no longer being offered to franchise operators. In fact, Young Yum Brands is considering selling the entire chain. So in 1995, Pizza Hut held 25% of the pizza market share in the U.S. Today, they have just under 14%. In 2019, half of Pizza Huts were still dine-in, but 90% of their orders came from off-premises orders. So this, according to Akash Gupta, who wrote the article that I'm citing here, he says, corporate saw the mismatch and decided to eliminate the dine-in format entirely, convert everything to delivery boxes, and compete with Domino's on logistics. Their sales haven't grown since 2004, Pizza Hut's. Their biggest franchisee went bankrupt in 2020 during COVID. They had trouble competing with Domino's technology game. That's why Domino's started killing. And their stock was the best performing stock in the world for quite a while there. NVIDIA and Bitcoin and Domino's Pizza. We could have all gotten rich buying those. Who knew? An interesting study out of Spain, authored by five different men. I won't name them all, but good job, fellas. There's an article shared by Sergio Ferrero, presumably a Spaniard. The headline reads, Prejudice and Truth About the Effect of Testosterone on Human Bargaining Behavior. It says, giving testosterone to women makes them behave more fairly and less conflictive. However, women who believe they have taken testosterone, but who actually were given a placebo, behave more aggressively and more unfairly. So women given testosterone made significantly fairer offers, which would lead to less conflict, and women who believe they got testosterone, but actually got a placebo, the placebo effect takes effect here, that had them acting more selfishly and aggressively. Which tells, what does that tell us? It tells us that women don't understand men, but that's not going to keep them from acting like they do. If you want help, ladies, there is someone I highly recommend. Her name is Allison Armstrong. She understands men as well as anyone I've ever come across, ever heard. Have you ever asked a woman what she thinks you're thinking, fellas? If not, you should try it. If she gets it right, once out of 10, once in 100, report back to me. I'll be surprised. Somebody named Rami Holland said she was in Thailand and met a dorky, unattractive guy who told her that he'd never had a match on a dating app back home, but suddenly in Thailand had tons of matches with Thai women. He said he was confused and wanted to know if she was having the same experience in Thailand. And she said that she wasn't. She was actually going through the opposite. Lots of matches back in the States, but almost none with Thai guys. But she said that was fine. She didn't want to date Thai guys anyway. Her conclusion was, it's well known that white guys are attractive to Asian women, and she said it's about more than just the status of being from a wealthy country. White guys are on average more masculine than Asian men, and she says it was more be attributed to the difference in masculinity, whereas white women are less feminine than Asian women, which is unappealing to men. She said, I think these cultural differences in femininity and masculinity levels explain most cross-cultural dating preferences. Yeah, it could also explain why the lack of Asian men with black women. Sports update, Aaron Rye sank a 68-foot putt on 17 on Sunday and won the PGA tournament. First English-born golfer to do it in over 100 years. But secretly, his parents are still pissed he didn't become a doctor. Mark Furman died. That's not really sports, but since he's of OJ trial fame, OJ definitely played sports. Mark Furman was the detective who found the bloody glove and then chose to plead the fifth after lying about his use of the N-word in the previous 10 years. F. Lee Bailey really got him to where he felt like he had to plead the fifth to everything just to stay consistent. Even the question of, did you plant evidence? He pled the fifth. And that pretty much defined his life. He moved to Idaho after that. He had a radio show. I think he lived in Montana and Idaho and had a radio show. And that's what people wanted to talk about. So it was his entire life. It's kind of crazy that he and OJ both died of cancer within 2 years of each other. The Western Conference Finals started on Monday, with some saying that is the true NBA final because the East is a little bit of weak sauce this year with the Knicks and Cavs. This whole century so far seems to have been dominated by the West, right? The most exciting player in basketball, in my opinion, is not playing anymore. He's got eliminated from the playoffs, Anthony Edwards. They lost to the Spurs, who were favored on Monday night against OKC. They were 1.5-point favorite. And Wimby, their 7'4 center, dude put on a show. He was the youngest player to put up a 40-20 performance in a playoff game. He had 41 points and 24 rebounds. And he sank a three from the parking lot with less than a minute left, which is, when I think about how big he is, that's probably like a normal-sized human hitting a shot from the elbow or even closer. But guys that tall usually can't do that. But he looked like the best player in basketball, I thought. In fact, he looked so good that if I had to start a team tomorrow, even considering players I watched when I was a kid, I think it'd be hard not to pick this guy to build your team around. I'm partial to Jordan, of course, so I think Jordan would be my first choice. But beyond Jordan, I'd definitely take him ahead of Kobe or Bronny's dad. I'd probably take him ahead of Shaq, because even as dominant as Shaq was, he wasn't winning Defensive Player of the Year, which Wimby did this year. And you always had to deal with the hack-a-Shaq thing, because Shaq only shot 52% from the free throw line. Wimby shoots almost 82% from the free throw line and makes a third of his threes. So I'm taking Wimby. I like watching that SGA too. I think he's exciting to watch. Jalen Brunson too. He put on a show for the Knicks in game one to pull out an overtime victory against the Cavs. It was an exciting little comeback. They were down 22 at one point in the fourth quarter. What I liked most about that was seeing Brunson make James Harden look beardless. He made him look like a little kid. Harden is somebody I've never been a fan of. I'm glad he's no longer a Rocket. I like guys like I alluded to last week. I like guys like Pat Beverly and Vernon Maxwell, scrappy dudes who like to slap the floor on defense and say, bring it, and get fired up. The Rockets have, for whatever reason, we get so many of these superstars who aren't like that. Post all the championships in the 90s, we had Steve Francis for a while. He was all offense. T-Mac, although he was hurt a lot, so I mean, I'd give him a break probably, but just once, I would have liked to see T-Mac slap the floor on D. Yao Ming is who he played with during his era. I wouldn't have expected him to slap the floor, because that'd be way too long a way to go. But I don't know if any Asians would be staunch defenders anyway. And then Harden, who you can't win with, unless he's your sixth man, evidently, as he was with OKC at the beginning of his career. Which, if I had to choose one arena to watch a game, I think it might be Oklahoma City. With everybody wearing blue, I think it looks like a great atmosphere. OKC or probably the Garden, or maybe New York too, but I was thinking Boston Garden, or the TD Garden they call it now. They tore down the old Boston Garden back in 97. The Spurs have always been an interesting franchise. I should mention, James Harden is an Arizona State Sun Devil also. But I was going to say the Spurs have an interesting franchise. They used to win a lot, especially once they got the Twin Towers, big lefty, David Robinson from the Navy. The Admiral, they called him. Shout out to you listeners who attended the Naval Academy. But then when Tim Duncan came along, so they drafted him overall in first overall in 97, then they really started winning. Do you remember right before he was drafted when commie Greg Popovich appointed himself the head coach, which turned out to be a good move? And do you remember they tried to project this wholesome family, like they had this wholesome family organization? You know what ruined their rep? She said, "You're only 16. You don't have a rep yet." That's what I think of when I hear ruining your rep. But remember Fresh Prince? But this is about 20 years ago now. Their star point guard, Tony Parker, French fella. Did you know he was born in Bruges, Belgium? That's just a fun fact. Bruges is probably the only part of Belgium I would care to revisit. But Tony Parker at the time was married to Eva Longoria, who was a big star. And they were besties with another couple on the team, Brent Barry and his wife. And Longoria said that they would do everything together. And then Barry gets traded to the Supersonics in 08. And Eva finds a whole lot of sexting going on between Tony and Brent Barry's wife. How about that? Staying on basketball, I saw where LSU's new coach, same as the old coach, signed the 2025 Big East Player of the Year from St. John's. He had already transferred once from UMass before he landed at St. John's, and then he goes undrafted, plays in the G League after being traded from the Jazz to the Celtics, and he even played in a few preseason games for the Celtics in October, just late last year, and now he's trying to play for LSU. So shit is getting out of hand. I don't know if he's going to get eligibility, but that LSU coach is still is being quite aggressive in the portals and stuff. Anything else going on in the news we should talk about before I do money stuff? There was a mass shooting at a mosque in California. If you had guessed the culprits were trans before knowing anything about them, you would have been most likely right. Very violent group, those Trantifas. And one of our parties continues to encourage transgenderism. And are they the party of murder from here on out, or is that going to change? I see where they're trying to get some testosterone in the party. They have a gay guy on the rise. who tried to claim he's got a girlfriend. Yeah, nobody's buying that. The Tellerico fella. The vegan. The Texan vegan. And then they have a guy in Maine that they found. They discovered this guy in Maine who's trying to take Susan Collins' Senate seat. He has a Nazi tattoo. But that's not a big deal. If you're running as a Dem, that can be explained. All right, let's do some money stuff. Got quite a bit for you here. First, since I told you about the story about getting dental work done overseas and saving a bunch of money, let me share this story because it too might save you some money. I had to buy a new vehicle for the wife a few weeks ago. I didn't have to, but they were quoting repairs on what she was driving before at like 20% of the vehicle's worth. So I didn't want to do that. And we did really good on that car. We happened to buy it at the perfect time, right before the price of used cars skyrocketed. So I don't get any credit for the timing. It was luck, kind of. We had a little one on the way and wanted to get an SUV. So in January 21, we paid $23,000 for a used Volkswagen Tiguan. It had about 30,000 miles on it. I don't buy new vehicles. Well, she drove it a little over 5 years, put almost 60,000 miles on it, and we were able to sell it with 87,000 miles and got $10,000 for it. And again, we were facing $2,000 in repairs. So that worked out great because I had some other offers on the Tiguan for $6,500, but getting $10,000, that means that the car was driven for 5 years, or 64 months to be exact, and it depreciated only $13,000 over that span, which is right at about $200 a month. So Mama got an upgrade this time. And this is where I thought you might get something out of the story. So we first went to a dealership, test drove a few options, and she found what she liked. And I'll tell you one mistake we did make there. The first dealership we went to, we allowed them to keep us there too long. So my advice there is to have something going on, like schedule an important call or something 45 minutes after you get there, because they will keep you. And when you try to leave, they'll try to say something like, well, is there anything, sir, that we can do to help you make a decision today? So she decided she wanted to hold out for a particular color of the car that she likes. She likes white. You don't say, huh? So about a week later, she finds a white one online and we go to see it and she wants it bad, but I can't let her excitement interfere with negotiations. You know what I mean? So what I decided to do, and I've never done this before, but what I did was I put the amount that I was willing to pay for the car into the checking account. Now, the prudent advice when you're negotiating on a vehicle is not to let the salesperson know whether you plan to pay cash or not. They would actually prefer you didn't pay cash so they can make a bunch of money fleecing you on the financing. The only upside for them when you're paying cash is just like if you were to pay cash for real estate. The seller gets their money either way. They're going to get their money regardless. So what cash can do is negate the need for an approval process. It can speed up the sale. But in the case of car buying, unless they're worried about not being able to get you approved, they'd much rather see you finance the car. And whatever you do, don't fall for how much did you want these payments to be? They will finagle those numbers and keep you indebted to them for a long time, if you let them. The average length of a new car loan back in the early 70s was 30 to 35 months. Less than 3 years was the average length of a new car loan. By 2010, the average length was 60 months. So 5 years became standard. By 2017, 6-year loans became the most common type of new car loan. In 2020, that was the peak length of car loans. It hit 68 to 70 months. Now, this is new cars. Used car loan terms at this point in 2020 averaged 67.7 months. So basically the same. That's incredible. 72-month terms are now the most popular. 72 months. 84 months, that's 7-year loans. They now account for a quarter of all new vehicle purchases. Some even go to 96 months. And these longer terms, they're common even among the most prime borrowers, those with the best credit. So anyway, I go back and forth with the guy a few times. So he wanted to take my offer to the manager, is what he said. And I was encouraging him, telling him to save me from having to continue car shopping. It's not something I wanted to do all day. And so after a few back and forths, he still wasn't below the number that I had in the checking account. So I had the bank app open, and I showed the wife with a sad face that, you know, unfortunately, we don't have this much. So it wasn't going to work for us. And I turned to the sales guy, and I said, man, this is all we got. And I showed him. I said, if you can make it happen for this, I'm all in. Otherwise, man, I hate to admit this, but we can't afford it. So he goes back to the manager again for either the third or fourth time. He comes back and he shows me the offer sheet that he's amended, where the number fell a few hundred dollars underneath the number that I had shown him, magically, of course. And he said, is this doable? And I said, doable? Yes. And I pointed at my daughter. And I said, but she won't eat this week. And he took me seriously and said, well, if, and I said, sir, I'm kidding. Yeah, we'll do it. So mama got a new whip. The Elon versus OpenAI case got thrown out for statute of limitations. He said he's going to appeal. Other money stuff that might interest you. Rick Palosius Jr., the director of research at John Burns Research and Consulting. He was talking about the real estate market. He says home builders we survey came into 2026 expecting 7% growth in single-family home starts for this year. We asked them again in May, and they're now planning for just 2% growth, which he says we think is still too optimistic. In Dallas, the Big D, renting a home hasn't been this affordable since 2008. And in Austin, Texas, not Massachusetts, It hasn't been this affordable to rent a home since 2000. In Austin, since guys my age were going to school there, that's 2000, the single family rent to income ratio got as high as 27% a few years ago, but the median ratio for what you're paying in rent relative to your income, the median over the past 26 years has been 26%. And right now it sits closer to 23%, so less than a quarter of your income being spent on rent. That's appealing. According to Redfin, the housing market now has over 600,000 more sellers than buyers. This, according to Bank of America, they say a K-shaped pattern appears to be emerging this travel season. Lower-income households are much more likely to have no travel plans. So nearly 40% of lower-income households have no travel plans. 10% have canceled their summer travel plans. 10% of all travelers. And Bank of America card data shows that their travel-related spending is down year over year so far in 2026. By contrast, middle and higher income households are seeing stronger travel spending this year. Domestically, California, Florida, Texas, and New York are the top states being visited. Internationally, travelers favor North America, specifically the U.S. and Europe. I have a friend who planned to take an international vacation in June that isn't going to do it because flights have gotten so expensive lately. He wanted to take his two kids overseas, but flights are about 50% more than usual. I told you last time that I would tell you what our summer plans are. We're going to Colombia, which wasn't our first choice. Thailand, I think, would have been our first choice, but we only have a little over two months, and Thailand, those flights to Thailand, you can usually get those for about $1,000 round trip. But hell, last time we went to Bangkok, it was $500 round trip. It was an Escape Houston deal. But now they're closer to $1,700 a seat round trip ticket. Flights to Europe are a lot more expensive this year, too. We're not planning to be in Europe again until maybe around Christmas. But since the late March lows in the stock market, the S&P 500 has surged roughly 16%, while the NASDAQ has gone nuts. It's up about 26%, pulling markets back up toward all-time highs. And once again, this entire rally appears as though it's tied to AI. These AI companies are buying compute like their lives depend on it, and maybe it does. So the question is, are we in a bubble or is this a real deal? There's an investor whose newsletter I subscribe to who said the party is best about a half hour before the police shut it down. Ain't that the truth? But unlike past bubbles that we've lived through, this one's, there's something real underneath it, and that is massive profits. So some of these companies are getting so much earnings growth that even after massive stock market rallies, parts of the tech sector still don't look expensive, at least by any traditional valuation metrics. They haven't been flooded like baseball with all these new stats and benchmarks. And so the market keeps chasing. We shall see where it goes. But as per usual, patience and diversification are your friends. I talk a lot about how the timing of when you came out of college, assuming that's when most people start investing their money, once they get their first real job, I talk about how much that can impact your view of investing over the course of your life and how you invest, or whether you're likely to take on some leverage, that kind of thing. Well, Fran Walsh on X was talking about the value of patience and said that if you had invested $100,000 in the year 2000, in just a basic S&P 500 index, then by 2010, 10 years later, you would have experienced two of the worst stock market crashes in modern history and had roughly $90,000 after 10 years. So a lost decade. Every dollar you were willing to take out of your paycheck, and this is when I was in my 20s, which in your 20s, hopefully those are the smallest paychecks you'll ever have, but it's also the toughest time to take some of that small paycheck and put it to work for you. Put your hard-earned money to work while you're not going to touch it. Like, put it in your 401k. Okay, I can touch this money in 50 years. It's hard to part with it for that long while you're managing to pay bills for the first time in your life. But as he points out, the investor who stayed in and didn't touch it, by 2024, that $100,000 would have grown to $600,000. Capaxis, whose posts I share with you quite a bit, he said this. He said, prevention is invisible wealth. It's underrated because it has no dramatic reveal. Nobody applauds the disaster that didn't happen. Nobody throws a party for the addiction you didn't develop, the debt you didn't accumulate, the terrible relationship you didn't enter, the burnout you interrupted before it became an identity. I like that. Let me leave you with this one to chew on. I came across a Marcus Aurelius quote that I hadn't seen before, or at least a quote that I'd never, if I had seen it, I never highlighted it or had a chance to revisit it. So I wasn't familiar with it, but Marcus Aurelius once said, "Until death, all defeat is psychological." What a great quote. Thank you, friends, for tuning in. If I can do anything for you, don't hesitate to reach out. I love you listeners. And if I don't hear from you, at least tell your coolest friend to tune in, since birds of a feather and all that. And that's all I got for you. God bless y'all. Thank you.